Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes for another week. I'm Naveen Razik. Alongside me, as always, it's Joshua Carwold, and we have plenty to discuss from a big weekend in motorsport. We had another great IndyCar race at Road America. NASCAR visited their first road course of the season, another thriller in MotoGP. But Josh, there is nowhere else we can start but with the insane race, the Formula One Grand Prix of Azerbaijan, which was extraordinary and well worth the 1:15 finish, I'd have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just, an absolutely crazy race, But basically, from the very start, it basically all started with the contact between Valtteri Bottas and Kimi Raikkonen in Turn 2, and it just went off from there. So, just insanely unpredictable and, a very enjoyable Grand Prix, to say the least. And, I actually did say on Twitter, I did get Twitter the last week. I did say on Twitter that this week would be very, very interesting. And unfortunately, that it hasn't been as interesting as what I would have expected it to be. But I assume that most of what happened at Baku will certainly boil over to Austria.
Yes, it's certainly set to be a very, very interesting few months for our Formula One drivers. Let's get the results out of the way. The podium finishes. Daniel Ricciardo taking a win, which he really shouldn't have had. I mean, he was in very ordinary machinery, but he somehow managed to make it work thanks to some decent strategy work from Red Bull and some good, just old-fashioned moving up the field, passing, and in particular, the fantastic pass that he pulled on lap 24, where he went past Felipe Massa, Nico Hülkenberg, and Lance Stroll all in the one corner heading into Turn 1. An extraordinary pass, and it just shows what we love about him. And I guess what we like to say about all Australian racers is that they race hard and they always go for the gap and they're willing to make the ballsy moves, which usually pay off.
Yeah, I've said this in recent podcasts, just these past few weeks, and it really does fully apply to last weekend's race. Daniel's greatest strength is making the best of the situations that are on offer to him, and it was on full display at Azerbaijan. It certainly wasn't the most plain sailing Grand Prix for Dan. When Daniel actually made that, triple overtake into Turn 1, I honestly thought he was going to go into the Turn 1 exit barrier or at least, clip it, because, he was going in so deep. So he was totally committed for the corner, and for him to actually get out on top, I definitely breathed a sigh of relief. And, it was really putting... you could always call it reckless from Red Bull's standpoint for their constructors' titles hopes, just securing third place out of Force India. If he put it in the wall, by doing an overtake in a crazy race where all you need to do was just keep the car straight because everyone else was crashing or had their headrest popping out or whatever, if you kept your car straight, you would get good points. So you could always call it reckless, but he pulled it off, and only a slight lock up on the left front, basically that was, in the end, that was the race winning overtake. So truly a fantastic performance by Daniel. Didn't lose his composure at any stage of the Grand Prix. Like, Daniel certainly isn't the kind of driver to, yelling or, just absolutely, making, all the complaining and all the other stuff that other drivers in the paddock do. So he just kept his composure and just took every lap and just took it lap by lap by lap. And, he couldn't believe it. Including his first win at Canada, this was the most speechless Daniel Ricciardo has ever been.
Yeah, it certainly was an incredible run. I mean, they pitted him early on the second lap and he was running in 19th and he managed to push his way back to the front. And he must have had in the back of his mind what was going on with Max Verstappen. Another disappointing result for him. I mean, I've looked at the mileage now. Red Bull have had less race miles than McLaren Honda, which is certainly saying something about the reliability of that car. And yeah, you do have to feel a bit sorry for Max that he's just had a bad run of luck. And really, he should be up there with Ricciardo. This is the year where we thought these two would really push each other and produce some fantastic racing, but it just hasn't been. And it's another disappointing weekend, I guess. A bittersweet weekend for Red Bull Racing in total.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it has been reported that Red Bull are not happy with the relationship with Renault right now, and you know that's all only going to continue. And Max Verstappen is, you know, definitely having the Mark Webber luck, as he has completed the least amount of laps out of any full-time driver in this season so far, with 277. The next worst, I should say, is Alonso, but he didn't do the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Max Verstappen is getting all the bad luck right now, and it would have been absolutely thrilling, you know, amazing to watch, to see how Max would approach that race, because yeah, that we all remember the Spanish Grand Prix last year, where you know the team Mercedes crashed out and he took full advantage, getting his first and so far only Grand Prix victory. So yeah, what Max, you know, could do in that race, you know, we don't know. You know, it's unfortunately the exact same scenario as Canada. You know, he could have pulled off an unworldly performance, you know, despite that questionable start. And yeah, you know, if I was Ricciardo right now, I'd be getting a little bit nervous, because you know he has done quite a few laps so far this season, 408. So that is, you know, only about, you know, 69 laps less than Hamilton and Vettel, who have completed every single lap so far. So you know, that's a very high laps completed rate. So yeah, if you're Daniel Ricciardo, you'd be a little bit nervous right now. And this does sort of, you know, put another wild card into the mix in terms of the silly season, because you know, for the first time since Max has joined Red Bull, there is actually a little bit of talk going on right now that Max might actually be interested in leaving Red Bull to join another team. However, at this stage, both him and Ricciardo are both signed on for 2018, and then beyond that is anyone's guess. So Red Bull should be very, very thankful right now that they've got both Ricciardo and Verstappen tied down for 2018, because if the Renault issues, power unit issues continue, then you know you would start to see both of them, you know, talking to their management teams about, you know, leaving Red Bull for either Ferrari or Mercedes, and that would mean that they would have to draft in Sainz and Gasly for the top team, and another one of their junior development drivers who's not quite ready yet into Toro Rosso. So yeah, you know, you can always start pushing the panic button right now at Red Bull. So that they need to improve their reliability, and you know, with all this team shuffling, you know, team engines shuffling around, you know, Williams Honda, Sauber Honda, McLaren Mercedes reborn, you know, maybe they could find a deal somewhere, but you know, Mercedes and Ferrari have denied them possible engines in the past. So you know, Red Bull have really, you know, boxed themselves into a very difficult corner right now. So, and there's really no easy cut, you know, simple solution so far. So, difficult times ahead, definitely for Red Bull. And, you know, Austria, you know, the home Grand Prix, there will be expectations. So, if both drivers, you know, retire with engine issues at Austria, then there are going to be a lot of, you know, angry and frustrated communications going on between Red Bull and Renault for that to happen at their home Grand Prix. And you know, already, you know, even without the engine issues, Red Bull certainly aren't going to do as well as they would have liked at their home Grand Prix in a couple of weeks' time.
We're doing the dance again in many ways. I mean, it was only 2 years ago where Red Bull were threatening to quit the sport, and then a year ago they were back and perfect, and now we're up to a second divorce. It's all going off, all very interesting. Let's move on to some of the other podium places I want to talk about. Valtteri Bottas, first of all, another great drive from him for be running. First of all, he was running dead last at one point, and a lap down. He was very lucky to get that lap back thanks to a safety car, but still, that's an incredibly far way to fall after colliding with Kimi Raikkonen on lap one. So for him to find his way back, mainly through pace and strategy, all the way to the front, including a final second across a couple of tenths of a second finish with Lance Stroll, who finished in third, and we'll talk about Stroll as well. But just another great performance from Valtteri Bottas, who was bringing it where the other drivers couldn't, and just holding on. It was probably, I'd say, a better race for him than Russia, because he really had to work hard for it.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm really happy for Bottas after the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, because you know it confirms that Bottas isn't, a driver that, just rolls over and, waves the white flag. You know, he'll actually get stuck in and get those great places. As, we probably would have seen, Rosberg, not be able to do any better than what Bottas did. You know, maybe even not being able to match Bottas. So that speaks volumes, for Bottas. So yeah, I think Bottas should be very happy about that result, and he was in the post race interviews. So yeah, just a fantastic for Bottas. Definitely even though there was the podium in another podium in Canada, he was sort of pushed out of the limelight. He was sort of in Lewis's shadow after he won the race. Pretty convincingly. So for him to basically go from last to second, that was an incredible performance for Bottas. So Bottas, should be very happy for himself, and if he keeps this up, then unless something totally bizarre or amazing happens in the silly season, then Bottas probably will be once again alongside Lewis at Mercedes in 2018.
And the thing that he was able to do this race that Hamilton hasn't been able to do in the past is get the Mercedes working in traffic. I mean, it's an extraordinary just the way he's been able to move up the field just simply by getting it working, getting it moving in a track where traffic wasn't going to be an issue, even though it's really long because of how tight it is. It's difficult to get past and pull overtakes, but incredibly strong performance from him. And considering that what happened to Lewis Hamilton, and we will talk about that a bit later, we're teasing those hot takes. But the way he was able to make it work in traffic shows that he might possibly be a little bit more comfortable with that than Hamilton, and that will be a real asset for him, and I guess for people, even if he doesn't stay in Mercedes, he's shown that he's able to be able to bring that car from the back all the way up to the front.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's something that's becoming more and more desired in terms of what a team is looking for in a potential driver. When there are those crazy days, whether it's Brazil 2016, whether it's Azerbaijan Grand Prix last weekend, whether it's Canada 2011, you really want a driver that just gets stuck in and gets the best result that they possibly can. Has the ability to just work with the traffic, use their slipstream very, very well, use the DRS to his advantage, very strategically, and get a really good bag of points, because more often than not, in the years to come, I think that's going to be the key thing that decides championships. And right now, Mercedes is 24 points ahead of Ferrari in the constructors' stands after last weekend. So, and most of that would be down to just Bottas's grit at Azerbaijan. Raikkonen didn't finish, so that was the second non-points finish for him this season. But it's the first time since the different a different amount of cars actually finished for Mercedes and Ferrari, because there's only been one other retirement for Raikkonen, and that happened in the same race that Bottas had his retirement at Spain with the suspension failure at turn one. So yeah, it makes him very attractive. So Bottas, his future is safe. I think, I did say, when the deal was announced that he'd either be the next Raikkonen or Kovalainen, and he's definitely looking like he's going to be, a future Raikkonen. So yeah, a fantastic effort for Bottas. And yeah, he'll sleep a lot safer tonight. And he's got the confidence, he's in the groove, and I expect quite a few more podiums for him for the rest of the season.
And finally, wrapping up the points, the podium finishes, I should say. Another points finishes this time, Lance Stroll. Now, this was an exceptional performance for a man who people didn't think had the discipline, who didn't have the skill and the perseverance of making a Formula One. He had a very ordinary start to the season, very, very ordinary indeed, but got the breakthrough points at his home race in Canada. And now, with a podium finish, could have possibly been a second place had he had a little bit more drive heading towards the line. He is now going to take this momentum forward, and I think he's gonna prove his doubts is wrong. I don't necessarily think he'll be able to keep this up for the till the end of the year, but he's certainly sewn up a place at Williams, and I think he'll now be on people's radar as a possible star of Formula One.
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting case for Lance Stroll right now. It was reported that he did have the secret test to COTA, and I did hear that one of the outcomes of that test was they actually were continuing to get the setup run, which does seem a bit odd at first, but when you actually consider that Stroll's previous season in open wheel racing, Formula 3, that would have that would have a completely different setup and possibly actually less amount to tune, because it's more of a spec, it's much more of a spec series compared to Formula 1, so there's more setup options. So that's where they think they've gone been going wrong. And that could possibly sort of explain his weird what's the word I'm looking for, shaky steering angle movements, and his unconfidence in those mid to well j just in the corners in general, mid low and high speed corners, which could attribute to his frustration at Monaco. So it's a very curious case. So I really don't know where Stroll's going to be for the rest of the season. Like, he was definitely matching. I think he was actually faster than Massa in all the sessions so far, in all the sessions at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix last weekend, practice and he was pretty good in qualifying as well. So he was really matching Matt Massa last weekend. When he qualified, let me just see.
Eighth and
He
ninth, I
actually did
think,
qualify.
and Massa was the man who was just behind him.
So he actually did out-qualify Massa. So yeah, maybe this is where the tables turn. He's got the confidence. He's going to Austria. Another power circuit. Another circuit that's going to favor the Williams. So another points finish, three in a row. It's not out of the question, is it? I'm certainly not writing it off, because Massa has shown that the 2017 Williams is still very, very good. Just as a whole for scoring, the mid to low range points. So, another points finish at Austria, certainly not out of the question. And looking even further ahead, Silverstone, it's okay-ish for Williams. It's got quite a few straights. Hungary, they'll struggle a bit. But then Spa and Monza, they've got really long straights, and I think Stroll will actually enjoy going through Blanchimont. So It's actually looking much, much more positive for Lance Stroll right now. So if he keeps doing points finishes, just around 11th to points finishes, then I'd say he's got the 2018 seat. So fantastic result for Stroll. He didn't bottle it. We saw, how easy it is to make a mistake, and then the race, thanks to Nico Hülkenberg, unfortunately, who just clipped the inside wall at turn seven, the turn before the castle section. It was a fantastic result for Stroll, and I don't actually think he made a mistake all weekend. I think his only issue was just being better at the actual fuel management of the car, because I wouldn't imagine that he was actually using rich mix down the front straight when Valtteri overtook him at the line. So I think that's something, that he needs to work on, just better fuel management. But this is the first time that anyone's actually spoken about Lance Stroll and fuel management in the same sentence. So it just shows, how big of a leap he's come, and it'll be a real shame for it to be a real fall from grace, because I did have confidence in Lance Stroll that, he matched Massa at the start of the season, following his, pretty convincing win of the European Formula 3 Championship last year. And, by around, Bahrain and Russia, I basically just wrote him off. And then all of a sudden, he's done ninth and third. And, right now I'm a little bit skeptical about where he is. So on the whole, a fantastic weekend for Stroll at, certainly not an easy circuit in the least. And, certainly not, again, just making the best of the opportunities that came to him. Like, he might, he certainly probably would have got a little bit nervous when he had to overtake Massa because he had a issue. So yeah, on the whole, things are looking, very, very promising for Lance Stroll right now. So if he gets, a few more points finishes, then absolutely he can have that 2018 seat at Williams.
Now, we've come to the moment I think everybody's been wanting us to discuss, the pivotal moment of the race and probably the season. The collision between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, who had finished fourth and fifth, Vettel leading Hamilton to the flag. Probably one of the most controversial moves in this decade of Grand Prix racing, if not in its recent history. I'm going to go through basically what happened. Lewis Hamilton leading up to the third safety car restart, I think, in a row. We'd had a couple at this point, but I think with the third one we had for debris or something like that. Sebastian Vettel right behind him. Now, at Azerbaijan, of course, it was a difficult track for tyres and managing tyres because Pirelli slightly overcooked the compounds and they're a little bit too hard for everybody's liking. So as a result of that, we had a lot of cars weaving around, a lot of cars trying to keep up the pace. So Lewis Hamilton slows up at the front, very slow indeed, coming through the final set of corners before the long kinks leading into the main straight. Sebastian Vettel is very, very close behind him, just about a couple of centimeters separating them. Hamilton just slows through, doesn't really brakes slightly, but not too much. But he does brake certainly, but not a brake check, and the kind of brake you would sort of expect him to put on going through that corner at that speed. Vettel very close, and as a result, straight to the back, loses a couple of bits of his front wing. So Vettel, in retaliation, gets very angry in a typical Ferrari style, drives up alongside him and then drives straight into him. He didn't even try to hide it. Very clearly, turned the car and drove straight into the side of Hamilton. Very lucky that there wasn't any serious damage to either car on that point. And after that, he backed off. And then we had a third race safety car restart, which then led to a red flag because we had even more action. After that, Sebastian Vettel was given a 10-second time penalty, but he would still finish ahead of Lewis Hamilton, thanks to a falsely reinstalled headrest after that red flag period. So the big question I think everybody is asking is, was the penalty harsh enough? He only got 10 seconds. And in the pits, so driving, that's around 30 seconds off his time. He still finished ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Did the penalty fit the crime, Josh?
It's a real difficult one because the F1 YouTube channel actually highlighted just in the past 24 hours that this thing, is actually not really that common. And when it has happened in the past, it's been an instant DNF for both of those, and there have been reprimands given out. So yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. But because of science's grid place penalty for Azerbaijan for his turn for his lap one turn three incident at Canada, I'd have to say it wasn't hard enough. It's a difficult situation because and this really does fall in, and this really does really did put Libertymini in a very awkward situation. If you give Vettel a race ban, then it's gonna be huge. It's gonna be huge and commercial losses, and you'll instantly make enemies of Ferrari and everyone at Maranello and basically the whole Italian Grand Prix, which could put that even under more doubt. And if you give them a disqualification, will still draw the ire of Ferrari. So it was a real difficult situation to make, and they had to make it in a short space of time. So I don't think the penalty, really did fit the crime, because only 10 seconds of displacement compared to Hamilton, who did have to stop anyway. It just really doesn't fit, really. If it was just a 10-second, time penalty at the end of the race, that's basically what it was in the end. So yeah, even less than that. So I really don't think the penalty fit the crime. I do think, he should have, been given more. I certainly, would seriously consider a disqualification and then a grid penalty for the next race. But yeah, it really does come back to, Liberty Media and wanting, wanting to keep Monza and wanting to, be in a good place when negotiations come with the pay dispute and the regulations with Ferrari and the big teams. So it was an unbelievably difficult situation. So yeah, honestly, I'd be leaning towards either 30 second time penalty at the end of the race, with or without a stop. With it's difficult because, having the car stationary for 30 seconds in the pit lane, that could then cause some, just some, running issues with the car. So I think, it would, yeah, it's it I think it's not a total disqualification, but it's somewhere in between for me, a 10-second stop go penalty and a disqualification. But he should have been given, Vettel should have been given, a 5 or a 7 place grid penalty for the Austrian Grand Prix, regardless of whether it was disqualification or not in Azerbaijan. Because, as Hamilton said, kids, watch this. And for Vettel to rubbish, that comment, was absolutely, it was just such a blatant lie, because every single every single driver that was there that weekend, whether it was in F1 or in the support categories, at some point in their childhood watched an F1 race in its entirety. That's why they're actually there. That's why they've invested so much of their lives into racing to get to where they want to be. So for him to rubbish those comments is unbelievably ignorant. And and Vettel's spoken, very fondly in the past how he grew up, watching Michael Schumacher, saying he was his hero and everything. And for him to go around and say that is
And
just
it's
the
not,
stu
he can't
it's the
really
st
talk about his own country. Well, the thing is, yeah, you need to grow attendance, and in particular his own country, he's falling behind a little bit at the moment, and these comments don't help. I think that the main issue with this penalty is the fact that First of all, there isn't much of a precedent, and the precedents that we have had have been pretty severe. I mean, the one that comes off the top of my head is the case of Dan Ticktum, who was a Formula 4 driver who, I think a couple of years ago, and he's now a Red Bull junior driver, he replaced Louis Leeds, the Australian. He went and under a safety car period went and rammed somebody off the track, and he got a 1-year ban. He overtook a whole lot of cars to do so, so that was a blatant disregard for any safety here. It was far more flagrant than Sebastian Vettel's move, but is it any different really? And I think, yeah, the issue is, first of all, setting a precedent. There isn't a precedent for this, and the thing about the penalty system is that this was the harshest penalty they could give without taking him out of the race, I think. And I think the FIA, that's the longest they can give, 10 seconds in the pits, which is a 30 second. The only other thing they can do, I think, is disqualify them. And maybe, I hope that we shouldn't need something in the middle that's worse than that, because hopefully our drivers are good enough, or are better than this. But unfortunately, Sebastian Vettel lowered the standard as a result. I do think that disqualification would have been the best thing to do. Let's get him out of the race, particularly because if he's going to be out doing these kind of moves under a safety car situation, when the red mist ascends, you don't know what he can do in the race. I'm not necessarily saying he'll go full Maldonado or something, or do something incredibly stupid, but you can't rule it out. This Sebastian Vettel is still a temperamental person, which is a shame to see. We thought he had matured when he came to Ferrari. He was going to mature like, well, to be honest, Michael actually really wasn't much better, though Michael never went as far as hitting somebody off the track. He would pull off some other dodgy maneuvers, but he didn't take it as far as Sebastian Vettel has. So, but yeah, we thought he had matured and he got better, and part of this Ferrari move at the end of 2014 was hit the next stage of his career when he stopped becoming the spoilt kid at Red Bull and became the man, the future world champion of Formula One. And it's a disappointing. It's great for the sport. It's given the rivalry a new lease of life. There's been a lot of talk about, should we bring back the beef and in Formula One, which I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I mean, technically, to be honest, the one time that a Formula One driver did try to fight someone, he looked pretty pretty weak. But it's going to give the sport a massive boost, and the rivalry, I think, is now cemented and will become, much like how Hamilton and Rosberg was the defining rivalry of the last 3 years, this is going to be the new rivalry for the next few years, whilst Hamilton is at Mercedes and Sebastian Vettel is at Ferrari. But yeah, it's a difficult one. I do think disqualification plus some sort of reprimand. He's had 3 penalty points taken off his license. He's now 3 points away from a full race ban. And I think certainly this will be kept in line. And the fact that they've been so secretive, I think Ferrari have done quite quickly shut him up, because they don't want him upsetting the team and the rest of the sponsors and the like. And of course, Ferrari is an item which is traded on the stock market nowadays with the codename Race. So there's money in Sebastian Vettel's actions more than just the championship points. The value of Ferrari goes up and down with each race. So yeah, it's difficult, and I think maybe the FIA needs to look at a harsher penalty for this sort of situation. But there is no precedent. And yeah, of course, will we be talking about this if Lewis Hamilton hadn't finished where he did behind him? Probably not. I think if Lewis Hamilton had run the race, people would have probably shut up. There'll be a couple of people, but I think most people would have said, yeah, that's good enough. But even with that, yeah, I still think it was too light. Disqualification should have been what they'd done, just to get him out of the race, to get him to cool down. Like how you yellow card or red card a player who's doing something stupid in football or the like. We need that sort of system in Formula One, and I think that's how disqualification should be. If not a red card, a sin bin option. Like 10 laps in the pits to cool down, you get in the garage, and then you get sent out 10 laps later. You're out of the race, but you're safe, and you still have, I guess, the opportunity for points, something like that. What do you think? Do you think that maybe we need to have a look at a different approach to the sporting regulations?
Well, yes, in a way, like, it's difficult because, you know, this is F1, and, you know, running these cars for no benefit, you know, costs an unbelievable amount of money just, you know, to race the car. Like, I'm sure, you know, if Vettel was, you know, given, you know, a 5-minute or a 10-minute penalty, you know, then, you know, there's really no point because, he's 5 to 10 laps down anyway, and there was only and there's only would have been about, 20 to 15 laps to go anyway. So Ferrari probably wouldn't even, let Vettel go back out, just because of the running costs and, and themselves wanting to save resources for the rest of the season. So I just think that, that an actual time penalty of, a few minutes to 10 minutes, it's a bit pointless in F1 because it might as well be a disqualification anyway. Because, just because of the sheer cost of running these cars, and if there's no reward for actually sending Vettel back out, then what's the point of going back out in the first place? Which really makes the actual idea of a 5 to 10 minute penalty a bit redundant, compared to a disqualification. So, yeah, it's very difficult, and and the big thing for me is because it was so unexpected, the flare up from Vettel, because I certainly didn't expect it because he seemed pretty calm. He actually before the actual incident itself, he seemed pretty good, and he was taking the race on, and you could see that he would be pretty open to trying strategies to get around Hamilton. And then it was just a sudden flare up, like it was just an explosion, and it was without warning, so it was very very unexpected. So and that's that does come back to the actual safety grounds themselves, about what's the best for what's the best for the actual other competitors on the track. So, there is the saying, don't go out driving when you're angry, and I think, in a way, this should, start to be applied to F1. When a driver is really, fuming under the helmet and, can cause, a dangerous situation by the drivers, then you have to consider taking him out of the equation. And that can be open to interpretation, whether that's disqualification or whatever. Just take him out of the equation so we don't have an unnecessary major crash that could, place someone under injury or worse. So, I think that, that does need to be taken into account. So, yeah, on the whole, I think, that the FIA just need to have a good, hard look at this as, you really don't want, an angry driver, under the helmet, wanting to do something stupid because they're frustrated about what's happened. Yes, there's the heat of the moment and, there's angry drivers and, even what Vettel did, at Mexico last year, that was fine in a safety standpoint, but in a respectful standpoint, it wasn't. This discussion is purely about the safety standpoint. It's nothing about the respect. It's nothing about the value or the commercial value, and it's nothing about the purity. It's about the safety aspect of dangerous, furious road racing F1 drivers under the helmet, behind the wheel, causing damage, posing a threat to other. Basically, innocent drivers that he could,
This is, and the thing is, this current FIA regime has all been about road safety, and they've been pushing that a lot. It doesn't look, it's not a good look when you're one of the contenders for your world championship has this case of road rage and thinks it's okay to barge somebody in the middle of the highway. I think, first and foremost, it should be, if we're talking about safety and sort of driver behavior, it must be reflected by what's if they need to set a precedent that should be followed on the road. So you can't barge in somebody in real life if you're angry that they overtake you in a dodgy way because it's just illegal. You can probably make some dodgy maneuvers and do a bit of weaving, but it's that you cross a line when you do that. And I think the FIA needs to take that line that any sort of collision in this case where it's in a safety car and in a controlled case where you're flagrantly disobeying the racing rules needs to be toughened up, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with all those. So, yeah, I think in the drivers' briefing at the Red Bull Ring in a couple of weeks' time, they just really need to hammer down to the drivers that unsafe road rage is just not acceptable in F1. Like, it shouldn't be acceptable in open wheel racing. Like, when it's actual, closed wheel fender racing, like supercars or NASCAR, then it's not so bad. It's not so bad because, first off, they're not actual official FIA championships, so they're sort of separate to the actual FIA themselves. And also, as well, they're closed bodied, so they can bang against each other, and a wheel's just not going to come off and fly into a driver's cockpit. So, yeah, just road rage in open wheel racing is just it's just not on. So, yeah, the FIA really just need to be in contact and conversation with the drivers about this, and just. Over the course of the year, have discussions with them and implement strategies for the 2018 season for all FIA sanctioned open wheel racing about what to do when a driver is basically under the influence of road rage in an open wheel race or qualifying or practice or whatever. So I think that's something that needs to happen. And unfortunately, everything I've seen so far, nothing like that, has actually been announced by the FIA. So, yeah, it's a little bit disappointing that they're not taking it down that route. But yeah, just road rage in F1 and and to an extent, IndyCar and Formula 3 and Formula 4 and Super Formula and all open wheel categories just isn't on. So. That they need to come down with an iron with they need to come down with negotiations and a firm stance on this. So it's disappointing that they haven't done that. But then again, the FIA is always a bit weird around this time because it is coming up to an FIA presidential election. I think later this year. So yeah. It's just a bit weird right now, at the FIA, as it usually is with the presidential election. So, yeah,
I
unfortunately.
think this the next driver briefing, I'll be terribly intrigued to see if they allow cameras in there or not, because in terms of, I guess you sort of want to have cameras out of there, but on the other hand, keeping them in, you'd certainly get a hell of a show. And I think it's going to be a very interesting Grand Prix weekend at the Austrian Grand Prix. Just going through some of the other runners, Sebastian Vettel finishing up in fourth position, Lewis Hamilton in fifth position, only 6 seconds off the lead. That group, it all sort of condensed rather nicely despite the big delays and all of that going on. Big gap though to the next man, Esteban Ocon. Solid result for him in Force India after colliding with his teammate Sergio Perez earlier on in the race. Haas, another good result for Kevin Magnussen in the Haas powered, the Ferrari powered Haas. Carlos Sainz in the Toro Rosso. Fernando Alonso in the points, good to see, particularly the racetrack where we didn't think they would be, helped of course by some general chaos, but still, a good performance from a driver who's just working and dragging that car back up into the points. And also points for Sauber, Pascal Wehrlein. We'll talk a bit more about Sauber next up. He comes in 10th position in the Sauber-powered Ferrari, 1.5 minutes off the lead. Then it's Marcus Ericsson, Stoffel Vandoorne, Romain Grosjean, a lap down. The last of the classified runner, or the second last of the classified runners. Then there's Kimi Raikkonen, who pulled up a little bit, who retired but is still classified, I think, because I think he finished 80% of the race distance. Then it's Sergio Perez, Felipe Massa, Nico Hülkenberg, Max Verstappen, Daniel Kvyat, and Julian Palmer, who you really have to feel sorry for now, the drivers who failed to make it to the finish line. Speaking of Sauber, let's talk about the other big news story that broke just after we recorded last week's show, but I think we should still discuss anyway. Manisha Kaltenborn, the first female Formula One team principal, has left Sauber after taking on the role in October 2012 from Peter Sauber, the team owner. She has seen the team through a rather rocky period in its history. Some decent seasons, some shocking seasons, such as 2014, where they failed to score a single point, and the sale of the company to the new Longbow Finance. And it seems that then she has had a clash with the new owners, possibly over drivers and driver preference. There's been a lot of talk, of course, about Marcus Ericsson's relationship with his backers and how that factors into Pascal Wehrlein and his Grand Prix hopes and their move to Honda next year. It's all very interesting and very intriguing, but it seems that Manisha will not be there to see them through to that new, different era under a new manufacturer for the first time, I think, since around 2012 or 2011. It's been a long time since they haven't been with Ferrari. But yes, Manisha Kaltenborn leaves. It's disappointing to see her go because, of course, we do need more women in motorsport. We don't know who's exactly going to take over at the moment. I think the team's operations were seen by the current team manager and the technical director over at Baku. And then they'll be looking for somebody to take over the team for the rest of the season. But not the greatest of news for Sauber, is it, Josh?
What many people don't actually realise is she's actually been at a part of Sauber since the late 90s to early 2000s. So she was actually around, and big part of the team for 2007-2008, basically in the Sauber glory era when they were called BMW Sauber. So yeah, like it's a loss for sure. She is a big part of, you know, of FIA's commission for women in motorsport. So, you know, I think, you know, she might just, you know, be more focused on that. So yeah, it's going to be different to see her go, and, you know, I definitely, you know, agree with her stance that Ericsson shouldn't be given preference over Wehrlein, because I think everyone knows that Wehrlein's a better driver than Ericsson. Anyway, as you know, Pascal has got, you know, Sauber 2 points finishes, and in his debut season got Manor points, their only points finish of the year also. So yeah, I definitely agree with her, and you know, she hasn't, you know, been the best of team principals. Like, yes, it's good that Sauber had a team principal, you know, in their struggle period when that particular person, you know, has been a part of Sauber for a long, long time. However, you know, I think just in that big struggle situation, I think, you know, just having someone who's you know, been, you know, well, not necessarily a driver, but, you know, sort of been in the more mechanical component of the car, be more directly involved in a car compared to a lawyer and an economist. But then again, that's just, you know, how it all happened. You know, she was given over the reins in 2012 from Peter Sauber himself. It's just that's just how it stayed for the past 3 years. So interesting to see what happens next, but I think, you know, this is unfortunately something that needed to happen to keep the money rolling through the door for Sauber. And you know, it's just unfortunate that's just the situation that Sauber's in right now. And it's unfortunate for Wehrlein, who should be given the better treatment compared to Ericsson, who you know, just hasn't had as good results in F1 compared to Pascal. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they recover, because the big goal for Sauber should be to finish ahead of McLaren Honda in the points in ninth place, just to get some extra money. I think that'll be really good for Sauber to beat McLaren, as that'll be the first time they've done that since 2007-2008. So, they've never actually beaten McLaren in the constructor stand. So that'll be huge for them if they actually pulled it off in November this year. So we'll have to wait and see, you know, what outcome this will actually give. But you know, it's a bit sad to see her go, but I doubt it would be that long. Like, yes, there is Claire Williams at Williams right now, but you know, it's sort of, you know, it does count, but it doesn't count at the same time, because you know, she's basically a part of the Williams family. So I really don't think it'll be that long before another female comes in as team principal at another F1 team. It's just, she's, created, a good precedent, and, there's just so much, encouragement, for females in the world motorsport right now that, it's sort of inevitable that another female is gonna come through, as team principal for another F1 team some point in the future. And that's good that, that F1 has now reached a point where it doesn't really matter who you are, or what gender you are, or whatever. The best person always gets the job role, or the person who's just the only one there at the time. So in Manisha's case, so yeah, it's good that it's reached that point, and it's a little bit sad to see her go. But the actual outcome this will have on Sauber, and they haven't actually said it's their aim, but their aim would be to finish ahead of McLaren and Honda in points. We'll just have to wait and see how exactly they'll affect their campaign to finish ninth in the constructors this year.
Yeah, certainly some interesting months ahead for Sauber. That's probably enough Formula One for today. We'll move on to another big open wheel series, the IndyCar series, which was back in action at Road America. A pretty solid race at Road America. It's basically a pretty solid IndyCar race in total, and it was won by the man who I think both of us have said is the firm favourite for the IndyCar Championship this year, Scott Dixon, taking his first win of 2017. It's somewhat surprising that it's taken him this long, but he did so, and he did so in a dominant fashion, holding off the Penske's, who were the favoured team. Of course, Chevrolet has been a bit quicker on the road courses this year, and they did pretty well, but not well enough to get on the top spot of the podium. Another win for Scott Dixon. He's now really firming up to win that fifth, possible fifth, championship, and if he does that, well, he is really going to cement himself as arguably one of the greatest motor racing drivers from New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was just one of those weekends where Dixon did whatever all he could do in terms of firming up his championship lead, because it's 33 points right now, so it's pretty impressive. That there's only Iowa and Pocono and Gateway to go in terms of the actual oval, so it's a lot of it's actually quite a few classic American road courses coming up, with Mid-Ohio and Watkins Glen, Sonoma. And Sonoma, most likely will be once again where the championship's decided. So Scott Dixon is all around in very, very good form. It's good that he got his first win 10 races in, just to get that win under his belt. So now he can really get to work in terms of his title chase. And just all around a good weekend. And Penske are really showing that they're really coming on strong in the second half of this year. So that's certainly very good and very promising for their championship hopes. For one of their drivers. And it's also good that Joseph Newgarden was right up there and fighting Dixon for the win. So it's been a little bit of a disappointing year for Newgarden. Yes, he won at Alabama. The rest of the year, it's been just a bit all over the place. So for him to, really be firing up there and just reminding people of why he's so highly rated, and why, he is generally considered as the next IndyCar American champion, then and he did that. He did that. And also as well, another fantastic performance for Ed Jones and Dale Coyne racing to finish seventh behind Dixon, the Penske's, and Charlie Kimball. Just showing, that Ed Jones, is, one of the future stars of IndyCar. Gained another really solid points finish. The series heads to Iowa next. A circuit that Newgarden nearly lapped the field at. That should be another good one as well. And also, with the Honda speed, but the Honda unreliability, it's going to be very unpredictable as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a good race for sure. And and that basically wraps it up right now. And just one last thing, Gutierrez has actually come out and said in the past 24 hours that, you know, he's a bit, you know, uneasy, a bit out of his depth when it for Iowa. So, yeah, just something to keep an eye on. You know, Gutierrez's progress in IndyCar. He did finish 17th at Road America last weekend. So, yeah, not so good for Gutierrez, but, you know, he's basically just keeping the car warm for Sebastian Bourdais, who may or may not be back for Sonoma at the end of the year. We'll just have to wait and see on that. So, yeah, another good weekend for IndyCar, and Dixon, you know, just continuing, just doing what he needs to do to maintain that championship lead, and, you know, just, you know, and keep himself, you know, right in the box seat for this fifth championship of his.
So, moving on to the other big auto racing series in the United States, NASCAR, which took it to its first road course of the year at Sonoma, and it was won by Kevin Harvick, who earned his first victory on the road course. Held on pretty well to take the win after, I think, Jimmy Johnson won the second segment. He qualified 12th, didn't score points, but charged into the top 10 in the final segment and led 24 laps en route to his first win of 2017. Another solid driver putting his name down as a possible chase contender, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to be fair for Kevin Harvick, he already was a chase contender. You know, he was just looking for his breakthrough win, because, you know, he's finished in the top five, you know, for the regular season, or five times already this season, and, you know, he's been ultra consistent. So for him to come out and win at Sonoma, you know, Kevin Harvick's certainly not known as, you know, being, you know, excellent at road courses, but, you know, he just, you know, kept his nose clean and, you know, just came out with a win. So, you know, that was a really good race for Kevin Harvick, just to get that win under his belt, and certainly will resonate throughout Richard Childress Racing for the next few weeks. And, you know, as we currently stand, we're actually very close to the actual chase itself, as, you know, the season is really gearing up right now. As I'll just get up the current chase standings. But yeah, just right now, you know, it's continuing to be unpredictable. And I actually did see Naveen. You know, this was posted on there was a post on the actual iRacing forum about, you know, just asking whether or not you actually like the stage system. And surprisingly, last time I checked, there was about 160 voters. There were actually 54% people actually liking now the stage system in NASCAR. So, you know,
I think that the thing about NASCAR races this year is that they've generally been pretty entertaining. I mean, I think more so than people expected. Whether it's to the chase, or it's just that the fact we've got a very even field and that we've got a whole lot of sort of not necessarily perennial front runners, but people like Kyle Larson taking it up to other people, to more experienced drivers in the field, is the question. But yeah, it does seem that the chase is working. I would still personally prefer a more natural format, and certainly I think we could possibly, I'm still of the opinion that I'd much rather, instead of having three stages, just have two races and sign them as such and have a proper start and an end, as opposed to the weird hybrid we've got going around here. But it looks like I personally wouldn't mind possibly just some slightly shorter NASCAR race, and I guess it's done its job. I guess people, there's less advertising during green flag running, which I think was one of the aims, by just dumping that all during the cautions. So I guess it's probably a little bit easier to follow if you're a NASCAR fan in America, where advertising is pretty rife. So yeah, I'm still of the opinion that if you want to fix it up by making the races more exciting, just make them shorter, because I think NASCAR and sort of those sort of races where the cars are also close, the longer it gets, the more likely that there's going to be blowouts and you're going to struggle for passing. But if you make it shorter, you can press the action and it tends to get a bit better. But yeah, it's a difficult one, and I think Basically, I would still prefer it if there weren't stages, but it's working, and I somewhat begrudgingly said that, yeah, I wouldn't have to say NASCAR have lucked into it. They probably lucked into a sort of a new system as such. I think it probably works a bit better than they expected as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I certainly, thought that, this just wasn't going to work at the start of the year. And for it to actually, actually work, it's actually pretty surprising. So I think that there is just a little bit of luck in, just how the races have actually, come about this year. So, it really does, shape up. And, I think we'll see it's true. By the end of Homestead, at the end of the season, I think, then we'll actually, look back on it and see, how it actually, affected the chase, and how it actually determined who became champion at the end of the Homestead 400. So that's just something to keep in mind. And, the series heads to Daytona this weekend.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. At that track, which will certainly be a very emotional weekend for everybody involved, I'd have to say.
Yeah. So it'd be great if Dale could win at Daytona. That'll be a fantastic way to basically run his last race at Daytona in the Cup Series. It doesn't look overly that likely right now. Is Hendrick Motorsport just don't have the speed for Car 88, especially at the bigger and longer ovals and the super speedways. So it's a bit of a shame that it's most likely not going to happen. But it's just time for Dale Jr. to step back and he's just run his course and he's had a good career in NASCAR. So there's definitely no shame in that. So. Yeah, and also as well, in terms of Rookie of the Year, Erik Jones still, even though he didn't have a fantastic race at Sonoma, he did finish 25th still leads the way ahead of Daniel Suarez as he's currently 16th in the stands right now. So, yeah, the series heads to Daytona, and, it'll be good to just have some good pack racing at Daytona under the lights.
Yeah, certainly should be another exciting weekend of NASCAR racing. Quickly, coming back to Australia, not too much supercars news to wrap up. I think the only big major story is Fabian Coulthard inking a new Penske deal. That's not really a big surprise. He was always going to stay there, and I think it would have been foolish for them to change what has been a winning formula and probably one of the new super teams in the new era of supercars.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's just a bit of a no-brainer right now for Penske. I think they've looked at AAA and how they've started and how they really got into the groove. So I think they're just aiming for that sort of similar continuity because Fabian is certainly holding his worth right now. He's the current championship leader, so there's no reason why they can continue to have the Fabian Coulthard Scott McLaughlin driver pairing at DJI Team Penske into the next decade. So as it stands right now, 15 seats right now have been tied down for the 2018 season. So there's only 11 seats left. So it's actually another very tight silly season, as AAA have confirmed their lineup, Ball Control have confirmed their lineup, Pro Drive right now they've confirmed Wittebon and Mostert, and Erebus have confirmed their lineup as well. So it's gonna be a really tight.
I can't really see anything changing. I think there's a lot of teams who'll be very happy with their lineups. I think Erebus, Lucas Umbrella will have changes. That's not surprising. Possibly even some stuff at Brad Jones as well, depending on how they think some of the young guns are going. I think Gary Rogers is pretty much sorted as it is. I see Garth Tander and James Moffat sticking around for another few years. That's most of the good seats gone, I think. I don't think there's really anywhere else
basically it's becoming a yearly tradition, but the yearly question mark. I've told Kelly about whether or not this is going to be his last season. But you know, right now, you know, Todd Kelly's, you know, doing, I know he's doing an okay job right now. You know, he's not really featuring that much in the top 10, but he's putting him some okay performances, and he's matching his brother Rick, and Rick's certainly not going anywhere for 2018. So yeah, they've got, you know, good drivers that they can call upon. You know, I'm pretty sure that Jack LeBrock would love the chance to hop into Nissan Motorsport, become a factory driver on debut, fresh from the Super 2 Series, and you know, really get stuck in. So yeah, it's really just a question right now about I think, you know, Brad Jones, you know, as you said, Naveen, is you know, certainly, you know, one to keep an eye on. I think Tim Slade will stay, question mark over Nick Percat, and Tim Blanchard, you know, it's mainly a question about the funds, and Erebus, they were all tied down. Even though it's not official yet, Dave Reynolds is, you know, almost, he's done everything but actually sign it. So Dave Reynolds is going to stick with Dale Wood at Erebus next year. Lee Holdsworth, you know, Charlie to work on Techno, they're not changing. So yeah, that's basically most of the seats, you know, basically taken care of for the silly season. So it's actually going to be, you know, pretty quiet this upcoming silly season for supercars. So yeah, it's mostly going to be about manufacturers, what types of cars are running, and the rollout of the NG Commodores. So yeah, it's actually going to be a pretty quiet silly season, and already Dean Cano, Steve Owen, and Alex Primo have been signed on for the Enduro Cup next year. Dean Cano, Steve Owen at FP Pro Drive respectively, and Alex Primo with Scott McLaughlin at DJI Team Penske. So it's going to be a really quiet silly season, I think most of the attention for the summer for us, but the Christmas months will be mostly on overseas, and probably mostly on F1, as you know, most of the other categories right now, with the exception of Formula E, of course, will, you know, be pretty set in stone, you know, very similar to this year. So yes, quite silly season ahead. Good move by Fabian to stick with DJI Team Penske, a bit of a no-brainer. And Fabian Coulthard, DJI Team Penske relationship right now is working really well, so there's just no need to change it right now. Yes, you can, you know, try and get, you know a star driver, and you know, like a Chaz Mostert or someone like that, but you know, why change something that works? So overall, a good deal, and I'm sure that Fabian will be happy to, you know, get that out of the way, so he can focus on, you know, potentially what would be a very surprising championship victory.
It certainly would be, and they're still up for grabs, and it's still another great season of supercars racing yet to come. Finally, moving from four wheels to two and to MotoGP, which was in action at the Dutch Grand Prix of Assen, and it was another thrilling race. Valentino Rossi just holding off Danilo Petrucci by 0.063 seconds. Another great win. Marc Marquez getting a solid podium in third place, and our Aussie Jack Miller, sixth place at the race he won last year. Very solid outing for him in what is fairly ordinary Honda machinery in particular. So yeah, Valentino Rossi finally getting his first victory of the season. It took a long time, but he's been the perennial number two driver in the standings all year. And unlike Scott Dixon, who's been up there and has been up there consistently for some time, Rossi's looking to do the same. If he can get the run going, I think he could certainly be in there with a shout for the championship this year.
Yeah, well, that could apply for any rider in the top four right now, as it's certainly right now looking like, you know, a four-way fight between Andrea Dovizioso, Maverick Vinales, Valentino Rossi, and Marc Marquez, who are all 11 points within each other. Danny Pedrosa right now is on the outside looking in. He's currently 28 points behind Dovizioso, so he's just a bit further adrift right now, but you know, if he can get a string of wins together, then for sure he can, you know, be a factor. But right now, you know, you have to say it's a four-way fight for the MotoGP crown. So it, a fantastic, you know, a really crazy Dutch TT, and you know, it really did set, you know, basically set the stage for what was a crazy day of racing on Sunday with F1 starting up just an hour or so later. So a fantastic weekend, and you know, I did actually say that this was, you know, the weekend that Rossi, you know, was probably going to win at, and you know, what do you know, Rossi goes ahead and wins it, not by much though. So yeah, it's really you know, fantastic right now. You know, MotoGP over the past few years, you know, has been absolutely fantastic, and the great thing I like about MotoGP right now is it's not, you know, being dominated by the big four or whatever. You know, there's actual, you know, outsider riders, you know, non-factory backed riders being right up in there and, you know, taking podiums and, you know, on the odd occasion taking taking wins. So that's fantastic, and you know, MotoGP should be really, really happy with that right now. So yeah, the series heads to the Sachsenring in Germany this weekend before their month-long break, before they start up again in the Czech Republic. And yeah, once again, you know, I just can't pick this one. You know, MotoGP right now is just, you know, very, very unpredictable. Like, you know, there's only been, you know, two instances where there's been back-to-back wins, and that's been done by Vinales and Divietso, who you certainly wouldn't have even considered to be part of the championship fight this year, but they're right up there, and they've won, and they've both won back-to-back races. So yeah, it'll be you know, fantastic to see, you know, where exactly, you know they all fit at Germany. And you know, this is, you know, a prime opportunity for Valentino Rossi to get another race win and just seriously announce his intentions, because after the summer break, you know, it's going to be a very quick championship all the way to Valencia in at the end of the season. So yeah, I think, you know, whoever wins at Germany, it will be a big statement to all the other three championship competitors. But yeah, it sets up, you know, what's going to be a very agonizing month-long wait for MotoGP to start up again at the Czech Republic and finish off what will be a fantastic season for MotoGP.
Yes, it certainly will be. That's the only major motorsports event going on this weekend, although the 6 hours of the Glen is happening in the IMSA series as well. So it is a bit of a quiet weekend, but I think we have plenty of members of the motorsport community who I think can need a little bit of rest and relaxation after last weekend, which was an incredible, insane weekend of racing. So we'll be back to wrap up all the action from the MotoGP round next week, as well as looking forward to some more big races, including the Townsville 400, the supercars returning to Queensland and to the streets of Townsville. Another exciting race awaits, and it really sets off the second half of this championship and the lead into the Pertec Enduro Cup. Very exciting. Also, the Formula One Grand Prix of Austria this weekend as well, the NASCAR race at Daytona, and next weekend the IndyCar race at Iowa, the second short oval, I should say, on the calendar, and a real open one. We still don't know which manufacturer will have the advantage on those particular tracks. Should be another great show next week. We'll see you then. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.